Rabbis Ephraim Goldberg, Philip Moskowitz, and Josh Brody from Boca Raton Synagogue schmooze about contemporary issues. Every week features an unscripted, lively discussion, special guests, and a behind-the-scenes look at leading a large and dynamic Jewish community. Welcome to Behind the Bima. On this episode, the rabbis are joined by Nachum Siegel, creator and host of the longtime radio show JM in the AM. Nachum shares stories culled from his 36 years in Jewish radio, discusses the evolution of his program, and reflects on the past, present, and future of Jewish music. Also, the rabbis flex about the unity in the Boca Raton Jewish community, plus a discussion about taking down statues versus preserving history. And how does Rabbi Brody's mother come up this week? All this and more behind the Bima.
Good evening, and welcome to episode 14. I'm Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg, your host, together with our panelists, Rabbi Philip Moskowitz and Rabbi Josh Brody. And as always, we are here to take you
behind the Bima.
Behind the Bima. Gentlemen, it is so good to be together again. I really look forward to Wednesday nights now, like right in the middle of the week. What's a hump day for so many? For me, it's an exciting day. We're going to hang out with you and have some great conversation and welcome guests. We got a great guest coming on tonight. I'm really pumped about our guest, who's been a hero, an icon in the Jewish world for a long time. Very excited to bring
him
on.
He's the king of Jewish radio, and he's watching us right now on Facebook right now.
He's the king of Jewish radio. He's more than the king of Jewish radio. I mean, it might be our first conversation with him, but he's really the king now of Jewish podcasts because it's no longer a radio show. We'll talk to that about that and much more. But before he comes on, first tell me, boys, what's going on in your life? How are you both doing?
Rabbi Brody, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. We got a big program coming up. Our annual Jewish Unity Day is going to be taking place Tuesday night. And this corona thought it would shut us down. But we're
still here.
Program than we've ever done.
We'll get to Unity Day in one moment. Let's just begin by acknowledging our sponsors. Every week, we got dear friends who step up and sponsor. They're amazing. And this one's exciting because Jeremy Pappas, Yitz Novak, two guys that we've worked with in their roles at APAC. Here's the amazing part. Neither of them live in Boca Raton. Neither of them attend Boca Raton Synagogue. They're dear friends. We work together. They're great guys. And they've been enjoying Behind the Bima, and they've been enjoying the classes, the articles. And they asked me to make this point. They said, you know, you don't have to live in Boca to connect with and be part of and want to support BRS and what we're doing. So we really want to thank them for sponsoring tonight, for making that point and setting that example. We welcome other people to come on board with Boca Raton Synagogue, with our brand and who we are, our vision, where we're going. And a huge thank you, Jeremy, Yitz. Thanks for all you do in your roles and your organizations. And thanks for your friendship and sponsorship tonight.
That's so nice.
That's amazing.
Such a great way to begin a show.
Yeah, they're good guys. They're really good guys. And they made a real statement by doing that. So let's start with Unity Day. Let's make a L'chaim to Unity Day because we're about to enter the 3 weeks. This coming week, we're going to have a fast day. Hopefully, we'll all be in Yerushalayim, the Geula. Please, God, we won't have to mourn this year. We'll celebrate redemption. But it's on the schedule. It's on the calendar that if he doesn't come, we'll be fasting and soon sitting on the floor. And we know the reason is there was no unity. There was no harmony. People couldn't get along. They were fighting. Unity Day is here to offset that. Josh Brody is going to bring us home to Yerushalayim. So, Rabbi Brody, to you, L'chaim, to Unity Day, L'chaim, L'chaim to all of our listeners. And as we see these numbers spiking in such uncertainty, we wish and we hope and we pray that we all stay safe and healthy and our loved ones, those who are sick, do well, have a full recovery. L'chaim, L'chaim, Barakat Adonai, L'Nam Alech Olam, Borei Pri Agafen.
Amen, Barakat Adonai, Alech Olam, Shekom,
Amen. What are we drinking there tonight, Rabbi? Oh, Rabbi Moskowitz, is that a glass of water?
I've been drinking
water. I'll tell you, it's really hot outside and it's hard to hydrate.
Glass of water. Okay, Rabbi Brody, what are you working on?
I actually made a drink. It's some Grey Goose with some sort of like mixer. It's like a mixer to make some sort of martini. We're supposed to use tequila. I ended up using vodka because I don't have tequila. So
that'll bring some unity. Well, why don't you tell us? We have a couple minutes till our special guest, till Nachum comes on. Tell us about Jewish Unity Day. What's the history of Jewish Unity Day, and what are the plans for this year?
Let me tell you. First of all, we've talked about Unity Day. But also I spoke today to like the mayor, not even the mayor. He's like the head of most of Israel today. You put me in touch with some guy. And I got
to
tell you about
I pass the big names on to you, Rabbi Brody. I take the small meetings, the big meetings I pass on to you.
I knew I was in trouble when I got a call from some other elected official up in Israel. And they said, you know, I just saw that on his docket, he's got an interview today with you. So he was like, what are you guys talking about? Not even sure. But it was actually a really great interview. Today's paper, look at this, front page of the paper. It doesn't make a difference which paper it is.
Exactly.
Jewish Journal. That's a prestigious journal.
Prestigious. It's got a distribution of one right now. But go
last
ahead.
Week
my
we
mom
spoke
is
about
the one that got it, and she dropped it in my mailbox.
I told you, distribution of one. Yeah.
But we have actually a very special program because we can't be in a big theater like we are normally, but we are doing a, you're actually on the set right now of our late night edition. And it's actually something that's very, very good. We actually put together, I think, a very, very special program.
Give us a little history. What is Jewish Unity Day? When did we start it? Does every community have a Jewish Unity Day? What are some of the highlights of the past Jewish Unity Days? And what's the plan for this year?
Yeah.
Have we ever won an award for Jewish Unity Day?
Exactly. Yeah. If you could see, the award's actually sitting right there. I'll get up, but you would see that I'm not wearing pants right now, so I'm not going to get up and get the award.
It's good. We applaud that policy. That is a wise decision. Good judgment right there.
But
Jewish unity. I've never had to pull Jewish unity out of you as much as I'm trying to tonight. What
I know,
is going
let
on?
Let me just tell you, because I got some big surprises. But let me just tell you, we're going to start out this program, which if you've ever seen any of the famous late night shows, you're probably going to think you're watching the late night show, even though actually a little bit earlier because in Boca, people don't stay up so late. So we're doing it at 7 o'clock. But one of the things that we are obviously highlighting is the fact that about 6 years ago, you had three very, very precious souls that were murdered. And in the wake of their murder, you know, the Jewish world united, actually came together before we even knew that they were dead. And we came together all across different stripes, all different parts of the Jewish world. Came together and said, why do you have to wait for a tragedy? Why can't we just get together? You know, right. Like you just said, Tisha B'Av is coming, right? The Jews are such smart people. We can accomplish so many things. And yet this one little thing, which we know is holding us back from the third base on Migdash, is called being nice to each other, respecting one another. It's like we keep...
What's your favorite quote? Running. March of the Living, Rabbi Lau, Chief Rabbi Lau, standing in Auschwitz-Birkenau, March of the Living. He looked out at a crowd of thousands. And what did he tell them? We've learned...
Learned how to die together. Why can't we learn the secret of living together?
We've learned how to die together. For the millennia throughout history, we've died together. We're going to sit on the floor of Tisha B'Av. We're going to mourn crusades, Inquisition, Holocaust. We've learned how to die together. It's time to learn how to live together. It's ridiculous. Right. So that's what Jewish Unity Day is all about. What are some of the highlights of Jewish Unity Day?
It's actually, I don't know if you know this, but you know, because we have it's a little bit challenging this year because we have to film in the living room, create a whole show. You're actually in the video. There's actually a part I got you on.
Okay. Good to know.
Pulled out the archives.
Oh, wow. Did I have hair?
You actually look pretty good. You actually look really good. But I had to make it seem like to the viewer that it's actually happening right now.
Well, spoiler alert, you just gave that away. But tell us a little bit more. You're being very evasive tonight. I know,
because I want everyone to tune in. I want everyone to watch. So
what were the highlights of past Jewish Unity Days? So how many people were there? Where did we host it?
Okay, we've had it in some of the biggest arenas and theaters in our community. Talking about FAU, it holds almost 2,500 people. We've sold that out, you know, more than one time. And we've had different rabbis that have been part of this experience expressing what it is that they feel unity is all about. We've had some very special guest speakers, including some of the families of the boys. And this year, again, we're going to have one of them as well. Some dear friends of all of us. And there is a very special message this year, which is how did our community collaborate over the last 4 months to help one another? And we have some very, very exciting stories that some of you might know, but most of you don't know these stories. And we wanted to share with the world.
That's exciting.
What our community is doing.
Listen, I don't know, what's the rule on flexing when it's not about you, but you're proud of your community? Because we're going to have a few flexes tonight. I don't know, I've got to get a teenager on here, a millennial, who's going to give us some of the rules on flexing.
He can flex. He deserves to flex. No, he deserves to flex.
No, not him.
Flex.
I'm saying all of us. If we're going to flex right now about our community, we won the prize, the unity we have, others don't. We're going to talk about the fire station event that happened this week. When we talk with pride about our community, does that come across as a flex? Like our colleagues or listeners, not from Boca, are they like, enough, Boca's great, okay, we got it? Or no, we're allowed to because it's not about us.
Flex away. Flex
away. Brother Brody, where'd you go?
Yeah, we lost Rabbi Brody.
Oh, there he is.
There he is.
You know what? You show me another community in the entire world that's got this. The biggest programs, biggest Jewish organizations, Birthright, Limud, some of the biggest ones have this. There's no community ever. To ever get this.
What is that? What are you holding in your hand?
This is the Jerusalem Unity Prize.
Looks like the AARP prize over there. What is that, the symbol of?
It's actually the three boys, right? This was given to us at the home of the President of Israel, along with...
They're together.
I said, along with the former mayor, Nir Barkat, mayor of Jerusalem. And I'm telling you, there were some very, very impressive people in that audience, and they all watched the video. Rabbi Moskowitz was there. Rabbi Goldberg was on the video. and some of our local rabbis were all there together.
Why wasn't I there? Because I don't value unity. Remind everyone
why I wasn't
there.
Family over unity. It was a Taurus graduation.
What did I have? What did I have that night?
Actually, you and I both had a graduation.
That's correct. That's correct.
One of us chose to go to Israel.
I couldn't go to the event at the president's house because it was my daughter's graduation. It just happened to also be Rabbi Brody's daughter's graduation, and there was no Zoom from Israel for that graduation. But that's all right.
And anyway, I was the lucky beneficiary of that.
Everyone's exactly. Got to do what they've got to do.
That was a great trip, by the way. That was a great trip.
And that was the first time I went to go meet Jake, by the way. Remember? You guys
That's right. Right outside the restaurant. Right. I remember that.
Everyone was like, how's Jake? Like,
he's a good boy. So awkward about it.
Right. Look, the bottom line is that the next 3 weeks, this is our job and this is our task. You know, there's so many things that unite us. Why are we focusing on the ones that divide us in the Jewish world? And I'll tell you this about anti-Semitism, and anti-Semitism is on the rise. Coronavirus came and the conversation, the important conversation about racism, has interrupted and supplanted what was the important conversation about anti-Semitism. And there's an important conversation about anti-Semitism within the efforts to fight racism that nobody's having or scared to have right now. But the bottom line is that our enemies lump us all together. The people who want to see the end of the Jews writing swastikas in synagogues, they're not looking Orthodox, conservative, reform. They don't look at what type of yarmulke you wear, what level of observance, or how much your background you have. Our enemies lump us together. So if they're going to lump us together, why can't we behave like we're lumped together? They hold us accountable for one another. So why shouldn't we act like we're accountable for one another? That's what these 3 weeks are all about. If we don't want to be sitting on the floor. I don't remember if I mentioned this on Behind the Bima in the past, maybe when my mom was on, when our moms were on. But when I got smicha, the first thing my mother said to me was, I had the klaf. I was so excited. Rav Schechter signed my smicha. She said, great, can you cancel Tisha B'Av? It's a rabbinic holiday, call it off. Mm-hmm. And obviously couldn't. But if we want to cancel Tisha B'Av, there's a very simple way, and that's practicing Avos Yisrael. Bottom line is figuring out unity.
Right. I mean, maybe you want to speak about it, either you, Rabbi Goldberg, or Rabbi Brody, but the dynamic of the rabbis in Boca is something very, very special, right? I mean, we golf with our colleagues from different denominations. We consider them friends. We go out to eat with them. There's a real sense of special camaraderie, I haven't been in every other community, but I would venture to say it is unique within Boca, the dynamic amongst the Orthodox rabbis and amongst our colleagues in other denominations as well.
I was actually on a bus, I remember. It might have been in Poland. I think we're actually leaving Treblinka. And it was an adult bus of participants, mostly from South Florida, but there was one from New Jersey. And I was talking about our community, and she raises her hand. She says, Rabbi, let me tell you something. We have that unity in our community as well. I said, really? The Orthodox, they get along with the Reform community? Yeah. They. She's like, yeah, they do. I'm like, what about the conservatives? She's like, yeah, the rabbis, they talk. What about the Chabad? Oh, no, I won't talk to the Chabad. So you know what? Everyone's got an exception. We don't have any exceptions in this community.
No, it's an amazing thing. We sit around the table regularly, and we have WhatsApp groups working on responding to Corona in the community regularly. I'll say we have an advantage some communities don't have, which is we're not looking over either our right shoulder or left shoulder. We're not worried about the op-ed in some Orthodox newspaper, or we're not worried about being criticized. There's an environment and a culture, and there's an opportunity down here. It's a little bit different pace of life and different. We don't have the magnifying glass that others are under. And we have that. That gives us the space. Now, it still is important to get up and make it happen. But some of our colleagues, to give them a little bit of a defense, it's not so easy for them. They're very worried. In other communities, you're being judged for who you partner with, who you sat at a table with, who you traveled to Israel with, and we just don't worry about that
stuff. But we work hard at that, right, Rabbi Goldberg? I mean, that doesn't always come easy. You and I can list several examples where that unity has been challenged, has been tested, and we always kept our eye on the prize. We always recognize that unity doesn't mean uniformity, doesn't mean we always have to agree with each other. We're allowed to have differences, but that the relationships in the community as a whole is much more powerful when we work together. So it's not always so easy. It doesn't always come so easy.
I agree. When the crisis comes, right? The whole origin, the background, the genesis of this Unity Prize was the three boys being kidnapped and killed. And the community got together and we rotated the different shuls, temples, synagogues, where we had the rallies and the prayer rallies and so on. You can't wait for the crisis to strike to find the phone number of a colleague that you never spoke to, right? We've traveled together. We've been there. We paid shiva calls to one another's home. We've celebrated together. We invite them to one another's simchas. We have lunch. Like you said, we play golf for no reason. There's a genuine underlying friendship. So the relationship is strong enough that when you disagree, you could say, look, there's an area we can't cooperate. There's an area we can't agree. There's an area we can't partner because we're just too far apart and fundamentally we disagree. But the relationship's strong enough to withstand that because there's an underlying spirit of cooperation, of love, of being able to work together. And like you said, that takes the effort. You have to leave your, everyone's leaving their comfort zone. We are challenged to leave our comfort zone at times. And I'll give huge credit to our colleagues in other denominations who make an effort when we do stuff together to avoid, let's say, Kol Isha, or to make sure the kashrus is the standards everyone can feel comfortable, or to do the type of things that everyone can feel that they belong. So everyone's leaving their comfort zone a little bit, but that's what unity takes. You know, you don't have to like one another, but you got to love one another. You got to be like...
And the biggest example of that is the Peace of Mind program that we do in partnership with our friends at Temple Beth El, which is a Reformed congregation. And what makes that so special is there's no ego, right? It's not about us. It's not about them. It's about supporting soldiers in Israel. And as you said, we flex a little bit. They're willing to be a little bit flexible. And it's a really beautiful thing.
Hey, and that's a perfect segue to welcome our special guest, who is an icon in the Jewish world. He is the king of Jewish radio and podcast, the father of Jewish radio and podcast. Nachum, we've known each other a long time, but you don't know. Maybe I haven't told you. I have such vivid memories as a kid. When I'd wake up and come downstairs, I'd have breakfast. My parents were getting ready to work. My father driving me to school. JM in the AM. It was always playing. Your voice was ringing in our ears. Rabbi Yudin's Dvar Torah and the Chizuk and all the different components of it. And we grew up with JM in the AM t-shirts because you'd have that the telethon and the t-shirts. We'd get the oversized one. I think it was like a nightgown for my sister more than a t-shirt. It was probably your t-shirt. So for her, it was like a night dress. It was a dress down to the floor. But we grew up, and so it's amazing to have you on and to be able to have this conversation. And thanks for all that you've done to lay the groundwork. There would be no Behind the BMO without JM and the AM and Nachum Segal.
Now that's a pull quote. Let me make sure my staff splices that one out of this conversation tomorrow. First of all, thank you to all of you. And it's funny that you have good and pleasant memories of growing up with JM. And there are people who stop me and say that they so dread my voice because their father would walk into their room to wake them for high school, and he turned the radio all the way up.
Modani. Regish, Modani. That's right.
And I must say, I feel here like I'm reuniting with three amazing friends. And yesterday I brought all of you up to everybody in my family, because everybody in my family essentially knows all of you. And of course, as Rabbi Goldberg confirmed for me yesterday when we spoke, Rabbi Moskowitz, who was a division head of certain Segals in Camp Misora.
Binyamin is for 2 years. Nitzel Tot.
Correct. I spoke to him about that today. I said to him, "Do you remember Rabbi Moskowitz being a great division?" He goes, "Dad, I was a Nazi. What would happen?" I remember. Anyway, I did confirm with Rabbi Goldberg yesterday that, in fact, that same one flaw of Rabbi Goldberg is the same today as it was 20 years ago.
Baruch Hashem.
He still apparently roots for the Boston Red Sox.
Still
I, of
Red
course,
Sox
remind you by Moskowitz that baseball history for me ended after the 2003 season. so I have no problem with what's happened since then. But aside from that, Ryan Moskowitz, it's wonderful to reunite with you.
So good to see you.
We'll have an opportunity one day to take in a Yankee Red Sox game if those ever return. Rabbi Brody, now, Rabbi Goldberg, I ask you, Rabbi Brody also, we know each other for about 15 years. He was a head counselor for many Segal children in Camp Misora. Has the congregation, how many years has Rabbi Brody been with the congregation?
Rabbi Brody's been here 19, 20?
20 years now.
I have to assume the congregation has seen his golf outfit, correct?
We've seen almost every outfit. You don't even want to know what he's wearing right now from the waist down.
They've seen how seriously he takes every pursuit, and he treats golf the same way he frankly treats our tradition. If he's going to do something, he's going to do it right, and he's going to dress the part. So
that is well said.
First of all, Nachum has the recognition of being the tallest head counselor at Misora, and I have the I can say I'm the shortest head counselor.
There may be some who would argue with you, but all right, if you want that distinction, it's yours.
That's
funny. And Rabbi Goldberg, yesterday I mentioned you as well in our apartment, and I discover, and it's only because of this show that I discovered it, I discovered that one of my daughters has listened to hundreds of your shiurim and listen to this profound statement that she made yesterday in my home. And it's not just a COVID-related statement. I think she meant it generally, but obviously during COVID, it can be emphasized. She said, "It's amazing. Someone who you've never met can have such an impact on your life."
Wow.
And these days, COVID or not, obviously, again, during isolation, we see this theory even more because people are interacting with people they either have never met or will never meet, frankly.
Wow.
Because of a forum like these. But I was thinking about that. And I, you know, it's funny, when I met Rabbi Reisman once or twice, I think I actually went to pay a Shiva call when he was sitting Shiva. I said to him, I just want you to know I'm your Chavrusa. And I'd never met him before. He said, what are you talking? I said, I've heard so many of your shiurim. Wow. I literally regard you
that's amazing.
As a Chavrusa or as a Talmud. Oh, and she also mentioned my daughter Chava that she has heard shiurim from your wife as well. So she considers herself a Talmidah of both Rabbi and Rebbetzin
Goldberg. Wow, I'm flattered. I'll tell you another connection I didn't know about till my mother told me today that your father, I know, was an esteemed rabbi in Newark, New Jersey. And my grandmother grew up, my grandmother was a Nolman, the Nolman Chazanim, the Nolman family in Newark. Exactly. AJ's my cousin. And my mother told me that your sister Leah went to JEC and Central with her. So there are connections that run deep. But Nachum, I want to jump in because we were talking right before you came on, we were talking about Jewish Unity Day, which is an event that we celebrate down here. And I think now it's around the country, around the world. The moms of the three boys that were kidnapped and murdered started that, and the Unity Prize they gave out. And I think one of the outstanding things and accomplishments of JNDA, and probably really underappreciated, is the level of achdus that you've created. Because I know that you have a listenership from across the spectrum, not only within Orthodoxy, which is unusual, there are few things that bind them together, but even outside the other denominations. And you're not shy of your modern Orthodox religious Zionist leanings and advocacy. And yet, obviously, you're offering such value and something so special that you're able to draw a really diverse audience and create a sense of unity.
There are a couple of things that come to mind when you mention that. One is that the largest supporter in the hit, because we are listener supported, the largest supporter in my 36 years of JM and the AM is a non-Orthodox Jew. And most people don't even believe, and it's by far, it's not even close. So that's number one, a great Zionist who unfortunately passed away just a few months ago. And the other thing that comes to mind when you talk about the unity is that I went to pay a Shiva, again, I'm speaking about Shiva calls. I went to pay a Shiva call years ago to a very prominent philanthropist in the Jewish world. And I sit down in front of him and he says to me, love your show, hate your politics. And I'm like, wow. Thank God that somebody who really is politically left-leaning and politically, you know, certainly a two-stater, et cetera, still feels the importance of tuning in and being part of it by listening, you know, each and every day and loving the show. You can actually love the show even if you hate everything I stand for.
Absolutely.
Which is a very important revelation to me, frankly.
There was a lot to love. I'm going to ask you one more thing. I'll pass it off to others to ask too. But for those who don't know, and I don't think there's anyone who doesn't know, your voice is iconic. I know people now bring you in just to announce the arrival of the Chassan and Kala at the first dance. That's how iconic that voice is. So Nachum, you began now it's Jewish Moments in the Morning. It was Jewish Music in the Morning. Since September 1983, president of the Nachum Segal Network, you began your career in radio at YU Campus, WYUR, 1981. 2016, we closed up on WFMU, listener-sponsored radio. I hear that ringing in my ears from my childhood. Now it's available only on the Nachum Segal Network. So,
well, I wouldn't say only. I wouldn't use that word.
Well, I wouldn't say only. That's where it's available because apparently radio listenership is essentially gone. So maybe you could talk to, as we are aspiring podcasters and we're first, you know, getting our feet wet in this world a little bit and we're only standing on the shoulders of the giant named Nachum Segal, literally and figuratively.
We would need a ladder to stand on his shoulders.
We need a ladder. But tell us about the move from radio to podcasting. What led to that? What do you see as the future of that? What are the benefits of being able to do that? What are the pros and cons of being a podcaster versus having been on the radio at that time?
Well, I appreciate that. And two quick things. I will get to your question in a second. I have to say that I said to you yesterday, Ray Goldberg, I have, and if I will tell you, gentlemen, over lunch down in Boca one day, the type of research I did, you'll be impressed. But I've done plenty of research on this topic. And the reason shows like yours are actually engaging and are actually of value, because the majority of them, especially in our community, are not. Yes, bold statement, but at this point in my career, I feel like I could say it. It is because of the host. It is all about the host. And this is not just to give you a compliment and to laud you globally in this forum, but that's what it's all about. And that's why this works. And I think your co-hosts are very understanding of their role. So I wanted to say that, number one, in terms of why this has become a success and why you're looking and aspiring to grow this even larger. And by the way, one other thing I have to say, Rabbi Goldberg, I don't even remember how many years I know you, because the others I can actually pinpoint to Ken Masora, but you have always been, in the last 15 years, you have always been on the Nachum Segal very public short list of the most talented Orthodox rabbis in the United States of America.
I appreciate that.
Wait a second. And by the way, and your name certainly is the most undisputed among the top three.
Wow.
But then I went, but I just have to say one other thing. I went to the Boca Raton Synagogue website, right? I wanted to learn more about the synagogue before I did this show. And I see how many staff you have. Do you know how hard it is to stay in the top three just of the rabbinic staff of Boca Raton Synagogue?
That in itself is an accomplishment.
And you're in the top three of the
United
States.
You are way too kind.
Wait a minute, I want to know who the other two are. In the United States.
I think the whole world at this point knows who I think the other two are, but I'm more than happy to share with you. The other thing is, one other connection, and this is how old I am. Rabbi Eli Zions is the son of a high school classmate of mine, a dear friend who you've probably met, I assume, over the years. I'm sure they've come down from Canada.
Yes.
Exactly. And he is unbelievable. So the answer to your question is that, look, it became obvious to us. I think it's becoming more obvious now to a lot of other people that this was the future. The most important thing is to be first to market. The most important thing is to, you know, be ahead of the curve. And when 2000, I would say 14, 15 started, it became obvious. A couple of things became obvious. Number one, it became obvious that the future of radio is all on demand. Obviously, that I have a tremendous advantage that in addition to the on-demand component, I am willing to do a live component every single day. So that still attracts, you know, half the audience that just wants that live experience every morning, the one you described before. And now this COVID period of time has just reinforced just how important it is in terms of being a community and being able to connect this way and be together in a time of isolation. And we made a very bold move. We made a very bold move with the cooperation of the radio station where I was for 33 years. A very bold move. We call it an amicable divorce. On the other side, our brand had become a little too large for a small radio station. It's something that has happened at that radio station before with other personalities. And we got lucky that problem was not a serious one, which it would have been 10 or 15 years earlier had to solve it. In this case, you know, we established a network. And even though we had always been a global entity, all of a sudden, because we are no longer tethered to terrestrial radio, the entire world actually sees us as a global entity. So it was really good timing. It was bold to do it when we did it and how we did it, but it has turned out to be a good move.
And the key function of that is the on-demand. I mean, obviously you have the live audience, which is enormous, but the on-demand component of it is the move to the world of podcasting.
No question about it. I mean,
without specifics about revenue, but in terms of how it impacted advertising, people stuck with you or you even got more with podcasting?
Yeah, I mean, we have a variety of revenue streams. Obviously, our fundraiser is one of the most important ones, but we do have sponsored shows. In fact, we did a sponsored show when we were down in Boca, if you recall.
Right,
back in 2017, I believe it was. Right, with Nefesh B'Nefesh. And, you know, we do a lot of on-the-road stuff, which is really suffering now, frankly. We were supposed to be in Israel multiple times since January. January was the last time we were. When we go to Israel, it is a tremendous boost for us because we have a lot of sponsored shows. How has it affected it? I think it's taken a long time for me to learn this lesson, frankly, 3.5 decades. But I think in our community, if somebody who wants to get the message out is convinced that every member of my audience is a potential buyer, a potential consumer, a potential, you know, somebody who would consume whatever it is they're selling, whether it's not for profit or for profit, then I think that's the whole ballgame. And I don't think they care if it's on demand that half the people are listening, or live every morning that half the people are listening, or, you know, people who love the live show can only listen to it later in the day, and that's when they find time for it. As long as they are convinced that 100% of the audience is their customer, when you've grown something as large as this, they're willing to sponsor the show.
Gotcha. Rabbi Moskowitz.
That's amazing. Yeah, so first of all, this is like a highlight for me. You're, as Rabbi Goldberg said, you are the king of radio, and I still want to know who the other two rabbis are. But let me ask you a question. You've done thousands and thousands of interviews over the last 33 years. Name one that sticks out at you as a particularly memorable one, either because it was funny, it was sad, it was during a momentous moment in history.
This is the advantage of 36 years. You finally, after many decades, develop an answer to questions like this. There's no question that my favorite interviews are the ones that can only happen on my network. What do I mean? And if I have time for a couple of quick stories, I'll give you two great examples. Robert Kraft, who Roy Moskowitz probably has heard of because he's won a Super Bowl or two, unfortunately for the wrong team.
I might have a picture of him in my office.
He's supposed to be tonight's guest.
What? He's on our show. He's on our show when he's honored by Yeshiva University at their dinner. right? This is it. I mean, he ain't going on ESPN to talk about the YU dinner, right? He comes on the dinner and he says the following, and the archive's available to the whole world, folks, NahumSiegel.com. You can see the whole thing. He says the following. My father, this is Robert Kraft speaking, my father would consider this honor from Yeshiva University greater than winning a Super Bowl.
Wow.
And
wow.
I said to myself, I promise you, he is not making this statement anywhere else. Except maybe at the YU dinner itself, frankly. And that those are the type of interviews I like. A funny one, which I always cite, I love this, and those of you, you're all involved in youth work, so you'll appreciate this. So there was a gentleman named Dan Brody. I don't know if the name sounds familiar at all. Dan Brody.
On The Apprentice?
Yes, very good, Rabbi Brody. Your television actor is going to get fired.
We're not going to go to that one right now, but
the only two people who remember Dan Brody, Dan Brody, are Rabbi Brody, and who spells his name differently, by the way.
Right.
And the president
right.
of the United
he's
States.
He's from Teaneck now, right?
I think he's from that area. Yeah. Rabbi, the president of the United States was the host of that show. And what happened during that show was if you got fired from the show, you could not leave the hotel that you were being put up at. In other words, you had to stay there for the 3 months that they were filming the rest of that wow. season, because if you would go back to your neighborhood, no matter who you are, people would know, you know, that you're out. If they would see you at a time when the filming's still going on. So what would they do with everybody? They would take all the people who were fired and they'd be in their hotel and, you know, suffering from a lot of downtime. And they would try to take them to different events. They would try to, you know, take them to restaurants, go out to eat together. They would try to take them bowling, miniature golf, you know, different activities just to keep them busy, to actually say to them each day that there's something to do. So Brody says, so they say to Dan Brody, they say, listen, you go to all these restaurants with us. You're barely eating anything because nothing's kosher. So we got to take you to a kosher restaurant. So Dan Brody says, I'm listening. If you take me to a kosher restaurant, any kosher restaurant in New York, there will be people there who know me, and the jig will be up. Dan, come on. Who do you think? You're such a superstar? I'm telling you, that's the way it works in our community. If I walk into any place that's kosher, I promise you someone from in there, my neighborhood's going to be there, and it'll be all over. All right, so they took his word for it, and they assumed that he's telling the truth. But, of course, it was funny that they called him a big shot. Anyway, so all this comes to a head when they decide that one day, they're going to take the entire group by bus to Six Flags Great Adventure. Okay. And they're all going to have this outing.
Was it Chol HaMoed Pesach?
They get to Six Flags. They get to Six Flags. And Dan Brody sees the crowd and realizes that it's NCSY Chol HaMoed Sukkis. Right? It was the fall. It's Chol HaMoed Sukkis. And he starts to panic again, knowing if someone recognizes me, it's all over. So he tells the story. He says to the director, to the person running the trip, give me a ticket immediately. Grabs the ticket, runs in, gets one of those Where's Waldo hats on over his head, and it walks around the entire Six Flags like that the rest of the day. These are stories, right. And these are why they're my favorites, that can only be told and appreciated on JM and the AM.
Now, do you get nervous? You're interviewing Bob Kraft, obviously a prestigious person. Do you get nervous for interviews like that? Do you get nervous you're going to blink, that the conversation is going to grow stale, that he's going to say something that you're going to have to recover from?
I've done 9,000 JM and the AMs, or somewhere between 9 and 10,000, and a lot of live events, and I am nervous every single morning. Obviously not to the degree that I was years ago, but every time at 5 minutes after six, I open up that microphone. I always say to my kids, if I wasn't nervous, I'd be nervous. And yeah, there's no question that Kraft or anybody, you want it to go smoothly. You have no idea who's a good interview. I will tell you now, again, one of my research observations for decades, just because someone speaks well, presents well, does press conferences well, means nothing when they get on the air and now have to be in this type of dialogue where they're answering direct questions. You have no idea how it's going to go. You know, Kraft, for me, again, was a big victory because of what he said, because he's saying something to my audience, again, that, you know, proves to people, if I don't listen to JMM, I'm going to miss stuff like this. This was so inspiring to hear the biggest, you know, NFL owner say something like that. But yeah, nerves are always, I'm telling you, if I wasn't nervous, I'd be nervous, frankly.
I think that's reassuring for people. It's very important for them to know, because people look at you, they look at your career, and they look at people who are successful in whatever industry, and they think, it comes easy for them. It's second nature for them. They don't worry. And they don't understand that whoever it is in whatever position, at whatever peak they've reached, they still have got those butterflies, those nerves. And like you said, the day they lose them is the day it's over. Brody, not my Brody.
You know, everyone knows nobody could speak to me the day of a live concert
Yeah.
that I'm about to emcee.
Wow. It's the same thing with Rabbi Goldberg also.
Sure.
when there's a big sermon, Rabbi Goldberg is
absolutely.
You should be with him before Shabbat Shuva. He's got the jitters. Let's put it that way.
I got some sweaty palms. It's like, you know, the pregame. You get ready for the pregame. It's all, yeah.
Super. He knows he could turn around and look at us, and we've got his back. That's all he knows. Yeah, maybe. But you know, I was listening this morning to your broadcast, and first of all, thank you so much for the plug this morning. And then right after you gave the plug, you told all your listeners, come check out this show. You said, well, tomorrow, got a great interview. Rabbi Yeshua Fass is going to be calling in. Everything keeps coming back to Boca Raton Synagogue. You noticed that, right?
Well, I want to tell you something. With the numbers you guys have down there, and I'm not talking about the COVID numbers now, thank God. I'm talking about the numbers of members and kids and families that you have. It's unbelievable. And what you're doing down there is just remarkable. It is. I don't know if it's still considered the fastest growing Jewish community or Jewish region in the country, but if you told me it was, I'd certainly believe it. You mentioned earlier when I was listening to the first part of the show, you mentioned about unity with other members of the community. And Rabbi Brody, you and I really had an opportunity to experience that when you gave us a tour of the Federation building down there. What an amazing campus it is. Very impressive. And nothing against Boca, because everything you're saying is true. But I will say, when we did our Jewish Unity Initiative to Houston, when we did our Jewish Unity Initiative to Pittsburgh, the Orthodox, the real solid Orthodox rabbis there are very, very conscientious about being in touch on a regular basis with everyone who's called a rabbi in their community.
That's great.
Everybody, it is really, unless I happen to see those, you know, the three communities that are doing it, I think at what we call out of town, there is really a concerted effort among the rabbis.
Man, Nachum, that's because like you clean up the bunk for visiting day. They cleaned up the bunk for visiting day. You came out there. We're like that even when you're not here.
Right. Well, let me ask you a question. Where do you see Sirius Satellite Radio with this whole thing?
Well, look, that's the big question. You know, Sirius could go I always say Sirius can go the way of the DAT machine. Does anybody on this call know what a DAT machine is?
No.
Oh, wow. A DAT. I wish I had a sample here to hold up. A DAT was a format, I guess, between cassette and CD, or between CD and MP3, depending on what, you know, how you want to. And it was a format that everyone thought, especially in radio, because of the way it was designated, that everyone thought was going to be really successful. And it ended up having a very short era because of the success of CDs and then eventually the success and convenience of MP3s. I mean, if this trend continues, where when you get into your car, as so many thousands of my listeners do, that app turns on right away. And you get, and at any point that you want, no matter where you are in social media, no matter where you are, you know, in terms of your listening pleasures, you could just access this, you know, even more and more and more easily. I don't know if eventually there's going to be a role for satellite radio. It may go the same way as terrestrial radio. Mm. Right now, I think what's really saving them is the selection and variety that they have. I mean, they are simulcasting a lot of stuff that you'll see on other platforms. So that's been very helpful to them. And the variety and the sheer number of choices, the channels.
But no Jewish channels.
Yeah, that's
Christian channels.
Yeah.
Right?
That effort, I might suggest, after all the years of frustration, may not be worth it at this point. You know, we have our own networks. You know, we have an obligation, I think, to promote them and to get everybody in Boca to listen to them every morning and every day. But I don't know if it's worth it at this point. To actually continue to pursue that.
Interesting. The hour is getting late for you, we know, because your day starts very early. I think
hour is getting late. I'm just starting to roll.
I saw your sidekick Miriam Wallach was on. She's probably passed asleep next to her computer right now. But and your
Machatenista.
I saw she was watching. She said I'm on boss late night or something like that. So I don't want to keep you too long, but I want to ask you one more question, because we've talked about your interviewing, we've talked about what it takes to host a show, podcast, radio. But your real, the foundation of what you've done is promoted Jewish music. And you have ushered for 36 years. You've seen artists come and go. You've seen the one-hit wonders. You've seen Sunni's Here to Stay. You've seen the development of Jewish music. You've seen it from the really Herzige, heartfelt, authentic, based on our psukim and chazal. And you've seen now it turn into some of the techno, could be played at a nightclub, a disco, could be played at a whatever.
Down there in Florida?
What are some of the Miriam Wallach is up. You should know. She is up. She's watching.
She threatened she wouldn't see the show till tomorrow. I guess she couldn't resist.
She's in. She's good. She's got a bucket of popcorn and a tall coffee. She's in. So can you talk for a moment, just, you know, close us out by telling us what you've seen has changed in Jewish music. What's changed that's positive? What changes that you think that you wish would have not have happened? What do you think is the future of Jewish music? What are some of the trends you've seen in Jewish music?
And what was your favorite concert ever? I'll add that.
Let me turn to my friend Benjamin Herzl and ask him, what he thinks to that, about your question. By the way, the only person for a period of 11 weeks to walk into the studio during COVID. Now some of my other staff members have been welcomed in, but Herzl, who I assume you see, right? Am I right? You see him there?
Can't see him right now.
Oh, you serious? You can't see him?
Oh, well, that guy. Yes, yes, yes.
I thought there was a person.
Yeah, he's my buddy. I did the Yom HaTzibut special with him, and on Zoom, I gave him a whole speech about
what's Nachum drinking over there.
That's great.
Did you do the L'chaim? You did the L'chaim already?
We did the L'chaim. We'll have another L'chaim with you, though. We can do another.
I would never. You know me. I would never do a shameless plug. But you never know when our friends at Bar Tanura have a delicious brand new Bar Tanura Blue Moscato.
Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, Rabbi Yaakov Ben. Oh man, I love it.
Bar Tanura and Moscato sends them over to us over here in Boca.
Yeah, exactly.
We have our sponsorships are full for the next few weeks. But you can tell we're happy to take them in, and we're happy to help them to promote them too. So come back to Jewish music. Tell us what's going on.
Look, in all seriousness, I'll answer your question. But it's such an unimportant question to me, and I'll tell you why. When it comes to Jewish music and my role, there is really only one thing I think of as you ask the question. Do you remember the beloved Mrs. Newman of blessed memory, the principal at Berea High School?
Sure, of course.
JEC. Oh, yeah, Rabbi Brody. That's your hood, Rabbi Brody.
That's my hood.
Elizabeth. So she said to me, and I will never forget this, and it'll stay with me the rest of my life. She said to me, you know what you did, Nachum Segal? You did one thing, and that is you made it cool for Jewish high school kids to listen to Jewish music. And look, there are a lot of trends and there are a lot of formats, and you're right. Things have changed in really dramatic ways, all directions. You know, we have techno on one side, but we have, you know, Shlomo Katz on the other, who's, you know, a giant now in this industry.
And Yishai has his Rebo. Own style.
Yishai, I mean, we can go on and on, correct. But in terms of my role and my observation, when someone like that, who was a real serious educator, I mean, those who knew her know that she was a real, she wouldn't just give out a compliment like that without really meaning it and having observed, you know, what she's seen in the community. That to me was the most important thing. So yes, there are a lot of different formats, a lot of changes, some good, some bad, some popular, some not. But the fact that a young kid in my own home, as my kids were growing up, for me, one of the most satisfying things was that Sunday through Wednesday, the music that was coming from their rooms had a certain style to it. And then Thursday and Friday, all of a sudden, you had this unbelievable transformation to Shlomo Kalbach, Eitan Katz, you know, and Mordechai Ben David. Because they felt that, like, you know, like we've always known, those of us who program, you know, through the week, as we get closer as a Jewish people to Shabbos, everything changes.
Right.
You know, not dramatically that our lives are so different or that we're so different, but you know what? Shabbos is coming. And when teenagers incorporate that into their lives, that's simply
big.
Remarkable. Favorite concert? I mean, it's got to be when I had the honor of hosting the reunion of the Diaspora Yeshiva Band.
Wow.
Only because for me, it was the most fun and just brought back so many memories. And it's just, you know, it was one of those nights that I couldn't stop smiling.
Diaspora is the best. Nachum Segal, want to thank you. You are an icon. You are the father of Jewish broadcasting, and really anyone who today has a podcast, anyone who today is able to broadcast, anyone who's trying to get their hand in, because today all you need to do is order a microphone on Amazon and have an internet connection. All of a sudden you think you're a podcaster, but really you are the father of it all. We thank you. Thank you for being with us tonight. Thanks for your friendship.
And
thanks for all that you do. Everybody should support the Nachum Segal Network and all the work that they do. Tune in to hear. It's easy. Download the app. Listen online. You got programming throughout the day. Tune in when he gives the top three rabbi list, the most important day of the year. and everybody support the incredible work. So Nachum, thank you so much for being with us, staying up late with us tonight. And we look forward to being in touch again.
All of you are amazing. I look forward, in all seriousness, to doing this live and in person down in Boca one of these days again.
Great.
Can't wait. Great. Can't wait. Thank you so much. Yamin. Have a great night.
Certainly will. Thank you.
Take care. You. All right, boys.
Great.
Nachum's the best. He's one of a kind.
I'll tell you, I felt so validated that he gets nervous before an interview. Wow. Because you know, you sometimes wonder, as someone who speaks all the time, and there definitely are the jitters, and you get a little nervous before, and you're like, is that ever going to wear off? Is that because of me? Am I not good? But it's nice to know that even the Giants get a little nervous before they get up.
Absolutely. Nachum's success is not just his radio voice, and it's not just that he knows how to be a good host. He's so heartsick. He's so heartfelt. He's so sincere. He's such charisma. He's just a great, great guy. And for all of us who've listened, even if you didn't know him before you knew him, he's been part of our lives for a long time. So that was really a special moment. And it's also nice for us. Some good feedback. We gotta keep growing. Amazing. Keep pushing.
He said he's done 9,000 shows. We've done 16.
No, today is episode 14. Before we get too excited.
Okay, no,
yeah, he's on 9,000. We're on episode 14.
No, but that's what I wanted to ask him. How do you keep the energy up, right? I mean, it's really hard every day to be getting up at that hour.
It's called Starbucks, my friend.
Nah, it's more than Starbucks. There has to be that like inner drive.
Well, he's passionate. He's passionate. He loves what he does. He's passionate. You know the favorite, our buddy Matthew Hockerman. Is he listening tonight? I haven't seen him in a while, speaking about early bedtimes. But Matthew loves to quote his father of blessed memory, who used to say, right, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. So you never sense that Nachum's worked a day in his life. Right. He's great. He loves what he does. I want to just take a moment to acknowledge the Boca Raton Synagogue Networking Group, which is an amazing group. Three of our previous sponsors actually came out of that group, and they're doing great work during this time. Corona, a lot of businesses are slowed down or shut down, and their networking is helping people grow their business, giving them access. Part of the membership in that group goes to Tomchei Shabbos, support Tomchei Shabbos. They're doing amazing, amazing things. And if you want to get involved, BRSNG, Boca Raton Synagogue Networking Group, BRSNG.org. And a huge shout out to Gila and Mark for their incredible work. We're going to have them on in the future. We'll talk more about what they do. But during this time in particular, doing great things, and they deserve our acknowledgement. So Rabbi Moskowitz, I want to ask you a question. Time flies every Wednesday night when we're having fun. But I want to ask you a question, Rabbi Moskowitz. What's your take on this movement going on right now to tear down statues? You think that's good, bad? You think we should be whitewashing history? Should we be editing out the parts we like or don't like? Are they part of the record? What's your take on it?
Well, I happen to have written a blog about that. That'll be posted later tonight, so everyone's welcome to read that. And like Rabbi Brody didn't want to show his cards with Unity Day, I don't want to show my cards with my article, but everyone can read it at brsonline.org/Rabbi Philip Moskowitz. And my basic thesis, and again, it's a nuanced thesis, so you have to read the article, is that there's a real tragedy in erasing history. And obviously, I understand the sensitivities and the sensibilities of the monuments and what they represent and the history behind them. I'm very, very sensitive to that. But my plea along that process is the importance of history. And I think nobody has done it better over the years than the Jewish people. And that's the thesis of the article.
So I guess the question, I'm not asking you to respond to it, and I'm looking forward to it in the article.
That was the most vague.
No, he's running for office. He just learned how to answer a question without answering a question. So he's officially running for office. But
I'll play that game. You want to play that game?
No, I'm looking forward to reading the article. And without even having read it, I'll be curious to see whether you address or how you would respond to. We leave up. You're right, you could visit Auschwitz, and you can't really visit. There's nothing left in Treblinka, but you can go across the world today and see places of our own where we were victims and of our own persecution and oppression. Even that's different than a statue.
Where there's nothing left. We built an entire, the entire camp is rebuilt as a
right. Mountain. It's a great point. My question is, though, that's different than what if there were a statue to Hitler in the center of Berlin? How would we feel? Would we be demanding of the German government to take down the statue of Hitler in the center of Berlin? Or would we say, let it sit there and put a plaque that this was the most evil man to have ever walked the face of the earth?
So I'm not sure I follow your distinction between statues and camps, right? I mean, we keep death camps where the worst atrocities known to mankind were perpetrated, and we leave them. We don't turn them into sanitized museums. We actually leave them in the state that they are because we want generations of Jews to go there and to witness it and to learn about it and to wrestle with it and to grapple with it. So I'm not sure I particularly hold of your distinction. Listen, the genesis of the article was a couple of years ago when we were on a road trip with my kids. And as we were driving up to New York, so you notice on like the side of the road, there are all those signs. There are all these Civil War battlefields. And you pass by this exit and that exit, and each one's a different Civil War battlefield. And none of us have any idea what it's about. And so my kids and I decided that this year we're actually going to Google the battlefield and read and learn a little bit about what happened in those places. And again, arguably, and we're learning more now, that horrible things happened there, that the genesis of it was built on slavery and really dark periods of our history. But I'm appreciative that those existed because it afforded me the blank canvas to be able to discuss with my children. And whatever the decisions are about monuments and statues, it's very inappropriate for me to comment on that movement. But I will say, one of the things I worry about is the notion of sanitizing history, of making it disappear in a way that we can't use it to educate our children to create a better society so that they can learn from the past indiscretions of our country. And I think Judaism in many ways has served as a model for those who have come along and grappled with it and wrestled with it.
So let me clarify. Yeah. Let me clarify my distinction, because my distinction is very simple. It's that Auschwitz-Birkenau, these camps, they are places where atrocities happened. There's nothing about Auschwitz which is a tribute to the Nazis, the SS guards, the people who perpetrated the atrocity. We go there because palpably we want the next generations to know so that they can say never again. A statue, by definition, is designed, it's put up in tribute. That's the goal. That's the purpose of a statue. You raise a statue to honor and to pay tribute. That's why it's there. So a concentration camp is not there to pay tribute. It's not there to honor anybody or anything. It's there so that you can go and that you can remember and that we can make sure it never happens again. So, you know, again, I'm looking forward to reading the article, and I'm not trying to debate you on it. I'm thinking out loud with you on it, that it's an interesting question of what standards we hold. And I'll tell you this, because I mentioned this in my Parsha class this week. People don't know this. The Magen Avraham, Avraham Gambiner, one of the really critical commentaries in the Shulchan Aruch, quotes that there was a tradition to fast the Friday of Parshas Chukas, this Friday, 2 days from today, to fast every year. And he says the reason is in 1242, King Louis IX burned 20, some say 24, wagon loads of Talmud. It was before the printing press. They were handwritten, and it set the Jewish people back terribly. He persecuted the Jews. He burned 20 wagon loads of our books. They were irreplaceable manuscripts. We lost some of the commentary of Balei HaTosfos, and King Louis IX, who in 1242 perpetrated this atrocity, has a city name for him. It's called St. Louis. So if we're going to start taking down Mount Rushmore and knocking down statues and changing the names, which maybe we should, how far do we go? Is it only the people who've been a racist, or are we going to change the name of St. Louis? Because maybe to the Catholic Church, he was a saint. To us, he was exactly the opposite, everything but. So it's an interesting question, and it's a timely question, both because of what's happening with the statues. And this Friday would have been that fast day because of what happened, because we were victims to St. Louis, who was anything but a saint. But I'd like to talk to you more about, and we're going to run out of time tonight, maybe next week, about you've gotten involved in writing and what that's been like for you. Has it put a new pressure on your week? Where does the creativity come from? How do you think about the topics? What was holding you back for a long time? You're like a brisker. Your perfection held you back from being willing to publish. Now you're publishing, but we'll talk about that more before another time. But I want to tell you guys about something interesting that happened to me today. I did a Zoom conversation with students at the Hildesheimer Seminary in Germany, in Berlin, and with rabbis from all over Germany. I have a relationship. You remember Rabbi Halpern, who was the Rosh Kolo, the head of the yeshiva there, who came to Boca several years ago for a Shabbos. Our friend Rabbi Josh Spinner, the Lauder Foundation, doing amazing things over there. So he asked if I would do the Zoom conversation talking about the rabbinate, balancing priorities, and you know, some of these exciting things I love to talk about. So I gave my essentialism spiel, you know, whipped out the PowerPoint, talked all about, you know, if you don't prioritize your life, someone else will. My whole shtick, right? Had the jitters, a little nervous before doing it. But I went right into my comfort zone of talking about those things. And I give my whole thing 20, 25 minutes, half an hour, and we got half an hour left. And I opened up, I said, any questions, any comments, any feedback? And one of them says, yeah, you know, one of the big things about essentialism, the art of saying no, right? The art of saying no. Real leaders don't know how to say yes. They know how to say no. How do you consolidate your life? How do you only do what's essential? You'll go a lot farther. You'll do it a lot better. And the student says, in Germany, the culture is entirely the opposite. The challenge is not learning to say no. The challenge is learning to say yes. He said, they're bored. And I don't think that anyone listens to our podcast in Germany. So from our feedback so far, I think I'm safe saying this. Nobody's going to lose their job because of it in Germany. But he said in Germany, the culture is kind of like everybody's in the box. This is the way we've always done it. This is how we do it. We do it exactly on time. We do it exactly this way. And if you try to espouse or project some creativity or excitement or a new idea or entrepreneurship, you could lose your job as a rabbi. So there, the challenge is not how to get people to say no. There, the challenge is how to get people to say yes. And I thought that was fascinating. And it was a failure of me. I didn't do my homework. I didn't come to understand who, you know, their culture before speaking to them. But it's fascinating. We could be rabbis.
Which is ironic.
Which
is ironic from a Jewish history perspective, that Germany is a culture where you're not allowed to be more progressive, right? Classically, some of
right.
the more progressive streams of Judaism have emerged out of Germany.
Right.
Just say one of those rabbis in Germany wouldn't do too well BRS.
They would not fit in here, and apparently we wouldn't fit in or do too well over there. So okay. I thought that was something which was really...
That was one of the first things you told me on my interview 10 and a half years ago. You said, Rabbi Moskowitz, I want to tell you something about BRS. You will never hear us say that's not the way we do it, right? No idea is off the table. It's not like, oh, we've done it for 30 years. We can't do it. We have to do it this way going forward. You will never hear us say, no, that's not the way we do it. And the truth is, you've held true to that. Every idea, we're always looking to grow and to aspire and to push the envelope a little bit.
The one who deserves the best credit for that is not us. It's our lay leadership. Our lay leadership says, as long as you're responsible, as long as it's financially responsible, as long as it's legal, then go for it. And there's a lot of other lay leadership who don't think that way. So we're very grateful. They give us wings and they tell us to go fly. Right now they've grounded us, but in general, they tell us to go fly.
We are like LL planes.
We are like LL planes. We are severely grounded right now. What else is going on, guys? Got a couple minutes left.
I spoke to the head of the Binyamin region today because apparently he called you. You were a little busy. So
I was talking to the Germans.
I spoke to him today and they want to do some programming with us because they said they know how we're struggling here in Florida right now with this COVID. They said, we've got a lot of people. They want to do some great things. And you know what we were talking some ideas and they said, Tisha B'Av, we're explaining how we were talking about those tours and things, you know, that people can participate in virtually. And then they said, what about Tu B'Av? I said, well, I don't think we're doing anything Tu B'Av. He's like, you know, Tu B'Av is a holiday that started in the Binyamin region. I think in Shiloh.
Of course.
He's like, why don't we do something together? I was like, yeah, call Rabbi Moskowitz.
Call Rabbi Moskowitz. I actually have something that day, so I will be unavailable on Tu B'Av itself. Tu B'Av is August 5th.
TaraandKalev.com.
Wow. It's trying to do
tshuva. That was for your monument question.
trying to do tshuva there. But yeah. So Tu B'Av is a big Jewish holiday. It's the holiday of Jewish romance. It's a holiday we're able to bury the Beitar, the Jews who were slaughtered and couldn't be buried until the Hatov HaMeitiv. We have an extra paragraph in benching in honor of that. So yeah, it's interesting to follow what's going on in Israel. The annexation and Prime Minister Netanyahu announced he's delaying it. And even here in this country, there's a little bit of a split. You've got two letters from Democrats. Then you have a whole third group of Democrats who've not chosen not to weigh in and criticize. Then you have a whole group of Republicans who have chosen not to weigh in and support. And so it's complicated. And I'll just say this, that the annexation issue is complicated because of the fact that just consider in Israel, there's not unanimity. In Israel itself, not everybody agrees on what should happen. So I have my own views, which is not for now, but I will say that anyone who thinks that there's only one way of looking at it needs to know that there are people who have a lot more invested in it, who can see it the other way, should just be careful about how they portray how easy it is, or that there's only one way of looking at something. Rabbi Bird, where can people listen to us after the show?
Oh, there's so many places. And let me tell you something. When you go to a place, let's say like Apple, and you can go to the Apple Podcasts, just click on search, Behind the Beam will come right up. You know, one of the things that help us move up in the ratings, and you have to understand why ratings are so important. It's all about the ratings, because then more people will be able to find us. You say, why is that important? Because we've got so much to share with people, especially time like this. Not heavy, it's just some fun. Everyone's looking for some fun times. Go drop us a rating. Not like someone gave us a 1-star. Who's this hater out there? You know what? That doesn't help.
There's like 60 or 70 who gave us 5 stars. So
I know. You know what? Can I tell you what happened? It's probably, I might have been someone like, I was going to say my mother. My mother's going to be mad at me. Sometimes you can't tell which is the right one to push. There's like 5 empty stars. You push the 1 star. You think that lights up all 5, and all of a sudden it lit up just the 1. You didn't know. I know. So the person that did that. But
let me just say this, by the way. This is episode 14, and your mom has come up 14 times at least.
And each time she probably cringes when you mention it.
At least. Mrs. Brody's amazing. So last week we talked about the Clark family. Their house burnt down. No one knows the reason for the fire, but the family has bounced back. And there was a miraculous story of the Torah that was saved. News did a segment on it. It was so timely because the Daf Yomi right now is learning all about the Gemara on Shabbos. What happens if there's a fire on Shabbos? Can you save a Torah? And the Torah and the Tefillin are what survived in the house despite gallons and gallons of water that was cast onto the house to put out the fire. The Torah did okay. So Rabbi Moskowitz, what happened this week? How did the community step up to say thank you?
Amazing, amazing. Our community went to the fire station. They pre-ordered packaged goodies for the firemen because they knew that in an era of COVID, they would not take home-baked foods. So they worked with one of the local Sinaholics here, kosher Sinhalik, to arrange for kosher snacks to be brought to the firemen. And about 50, 60 of our members showed up at the fire station literally just to say thank you. And it was the most amazing thing, because the chief of the fire department said that he's been doing it for 30 years. 30 years. He said he never, ever remembers being thanked in the way that he was thanked this week by the Jewish community. And you hear stories like that. And again, it just, it gives you goosebumps. It was a real moment of pride for our community. It was genuine. People were really appreciative. And most importantly, it was a massive Kiddush Hashem. A lot of the firemen here are Jewish, not affiliated necessarily. And it was a really big Kiddush Hashem for them to see both how the Jewish community comes to support each other, but also how we express our gratitude to these people on the front lines that are risking their lives every single day. It was amazing.
You know what the best part is, and the reason that it's not a flex for us to say it, we had nothing to do with it. It's not like we called the community and said, we got a great idea, let's go to the fire department and say thank you. Our neighbors, our members, they're amazing. Our family, our BRS family, that's what it is a family. They're like, we got to go say thank you. They saved the neighborhood. They saved the community. These firemen came. I don't know if anyone's following. This was the hottest week in South Florida's history. Like, we set records. And these firemen, you know what it is when you wear that outfit and you're fighting a fire, and they were dehydrated. They were being checked. It was unbelievable. And it's a beautiful thing. The community on its own came to do it. So it really was special and a great point of pride for us. Really excited about that. Really,
can I
really
show you this? Look at this.
Your mom?
Out of the press. Someone just was listening. 5-star rating right over there. Just listened for the first time. Really enjoyed.
It's easy to do. We see who you are, by the way, because we could see who's listening on all these platforms. Just take a moment. Go on Apple Podcasts or any podcast player. And again, this is not for us. We don't make a living, thank God, this way. You know, we don't make one penny this way. We get some bling once in a while, but we don't make a living anyway with this. So we want more people to hear Nachum Segal and Rav Moshe Weinberger and Marvell and Aaron Cutler. And you should see who we're going to have next week. We got guests lined up. We got new people living in the neighborhood, and we're going to get guests lined up. And we got some, yeah.
You know, I was listening to Nachum this morning.
Special Shavasar Batama's episode.
Yeah.
I was listening to Nachum this morning. He was talking about how they have something called like the Jewish Music Foundation. Like, I guess that's the nonprofit way of taking some donations there. How do we get in on that foundation? we're a Jewish radio show.
We are.
RNKalev.com.
Okay, relax. We're going to leave it right there. We want to thank our friends, Jeremy Pappas, Yitz Novak. You did an amazing job. Thank you for your teaching, leading the way, that you don't have to be in Boca in order to feel part of BRS. BRS is a movement. BRS is a movement. It's not about us. Like we just said, it's about our members. It's about our family. It's about what we believe in. It's about what we stand for. It's about what we fight for. It's a movement. So join the BRS movement. You don't have to live in Boca, although you pay a lot less taxes if you do live here in Florida. But you don't have to live in Florida. You don't have to live in Boca. Join the movement. Listen, rate, review. Share. Jeremy and Yitz have led the way in showing that. We're so grateful to them. Join the brsng.org, Boca Raton Synagogue Networking Group, and help your business during this time. Thanks to Gila and to Mark. And on behalf of Rabbi Moskowitz, Rabbi Brody, I'm Rabbi Goldberg. Thank you so much. We want to tell you, stay happy, stay healthy, stay holy. Have a great night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Bima. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you next week for another peek behind the Bima.